But now we're going to get into the circularity argument, because it seems to be.
Yeah,
because
this one is an objection to the presuppositionalist approach, right?
Sure. Sure. And so you have this harsh circularity of the characterizedness of general Christians in general saying, I believe the Bible because it's God's word. Well, it tells me it's God's word, so therefore I believe the Bible. Well, are we doing the same thing? Are we saying, well, we have the foundation for all apologetics. The Bible tells me that it's the source for all apologetic methodology. And so I believe it because this is the way that happens. Okay. So that's what we're going to cover here in a circular argument, question mark.
And also, we might want to point out, not only do unbelievers would suggest that it's kind of that there's a circularity, but even other approaches to apologetics suggest that the presuppositionalist approach is circular. In fact, that's the biggest, fault, with scare quotes, that other positions find with regard to presuppositions. Well, it's circular. How can you, assume that the Bible is true and then try to prove that the Bible is true? It's just a circular argument. It's not a good methodology, and so you shouldn't be using it. It's ridiculous. And so Frame wants to go after that particular objection to presuppositionalist apologetics. And so that's what he does here in this particular section.
Mm-hmm. So does this mean that we are called to embrace circular arguments only in one sense? Ooh, okay. So we're kind of admitting it is a little bit circular. maybe there's a reason for it. We are not called to use arguments such as this. So this is what we're not called to do. The Bible is true, therefore the Bible is true. That would be...
Well, that's circular, right?
That would be adding nothing to the conversation whatsoever.
Exactly.
The Bible is true is a good statement, but... why, therefore, the Bible is true. That's not what we're doing here. One can certainly say that there is a kind of circularity in presuppositional apologetics, but the circularity is neither vicious nor fallacious. It sounds circular to say that our faith governs our reasoning, and also it is in turn based on rationality. But it's important to remember that rationality of which we speak, rationality that serves on the rational basis for faith, is God's own rationality. So, there we're breaking the chain. We're not going based on our own rationality. We're appealing to God's rationality.
Right. So we say God's rationality, right, is the foundation, is the basis of our rationality, which allows us then to do our apologetic methodology. And so the foundation is God, and so we're trying to show that God is indeed the case, that he's true and that sort of thing. But he is the foundation, right? And so we don't want to forget that. He says, if faith is in accord with God's own thought, his rationality, then it goes without saying that it will also be in accord with the best human reason, which, images God. We're created in the image and likeness of God. So God gave us our rational equipment, not to deceive us, but so that we might gain knowledge. So in biblical argument, therefore, there is both reasoning and evidence. The clear revelation that God has given of himself in the created world, right? So that's reasoning. That's a revelation from God that God has given, and evidence, a revelation from God that God has given in the created world. So it is both right and proper, he says, to use evidences and human logic to confirm faith. And again, the slam, we might say, on presuppositional apologetics is, well, you should use evidence. You don't use evidence. And Frame is saying, yes, we are to use evidence, right? He's not dismissing evidence, but he's suggesting that we have to have a certain ultimate commitment, a foundation. And of course, that is based on the true and the living God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, God calls us, come, let us reason together. Jesus extols the disciples saying, you've seen so much. How do you not yet know these things? There's not a justification. Oh, you're saved. You're switched and you should be perfect from here on in. The calling is to be perfect. The calling is to be more holy. The calling is to conform our hearts to the hearts of Christ. But the learning, the call to from Paul to have the young men learn from the older men, from the young women to learn from the older women, from the congregation to learn from the apostles. And so this isn't a knock against learning or evidences or that type of apologetics. It's what is the basis for which we can say all those things are able to be done. And so that's where we're grounding our initial starting point. All right. So does this fact then eliminate the possibility of communication between believer and unbeliever? Well, it might seem so. The Christian.
Right. So notice what the problem that he's raising here, right? Well, if we have a philosophical presupposition or a Christian ultimate commitment that we start from, then how do we communicate with the unbeliever if we're starting from a place that they're not starting from, right? How do we bridge that particular gap, right? Does this eliminate the possibility, suggesting, of communication with the, between the believer and the unbeliever? Yeah. I mean, it sure seems so. And that's what he says, right? It seems so, because one is starting from one place and the other one is starting from another place. So where do you, where is the common ground, we might ask, right?
Right. And again, it's not to give so much common ground to say, well, we all have these kind of same starting points. We're all grounded in the knowledge of God. So therefore, I'll give the other side everything possible. No, again, make them earn it. Make them substantiate, based not on your worldview, that doesn't happen yet. It will happen, but make them substantiate it on their own against God, non-recognizing of who God is worldview. And so that's what we're calling to do from the start. Provide the basis. The Christian argues on biblical criteria that the resurrection is a fact. The non-Christian replies that he cannot accept those criteria, and that he will not accept the resurrection unless we prove it by, say, the standards of Hume's empiricism. If I'm given the resurrected body, if I'm able to go back in time and have a video provided to me of the resurrection, only then will I believe. We reply that we cannot accept Hume's presuppositions. The unbeliever says that he cannot accept ours. Does this end the conversation? Yes, it does. We all get to go home. Great job, everyone. Certainly not. So there are several reasons why, and so we'll cover those now.